Welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Evan.
I am Javier.
This week, a memorable tag team who started wrestling in the 60s?
I'm sorry?
The 60s. We're talking about the Bushwhackers this week.
We're talking about the Bushwhackers, the Sheepherders, the Kiwi Sheepherders, every kind of variation around the New Zealand slash Australia slash sheep.
Kiwis and herding animals of sorts. Like that was the general
animals
vibe.
Of wool.
Yes, very strong Catan vibes here. Butch Miller, Luke Williams, the Bushwhackers. Now, when we go on to, like, when I start these and do the research and start my notes, I always go to the Wikipedia page. And the first thing is always, you know, history. Like, when did they start? And they started in 1966.
Damn.
That is absurd.
My mother was not alive yet.
1960. Their years active on Wikipedia are 1966 to 2001.
Yes. And that's because Luke decided to retire, not Butch.
They just keep going. They're like Energizer bunnies. Before we dive fully into the Bushwhackers, this is Crossbody of Work, a show where we look at a wrestler's career through five of their most important matches. We're covering a tag team this week, so we're covering them together, of course, because that is how they are most well known, much like Javier and I.
Let's go!
Do you know us together?
That's so very true.
It's true.
However, we have it broken up, I think, twice. They broke up twice during their careers.
Yeah, well, and we'll talk about like why they broke up, because it wasn't like a bad thing. It just kind of happened, which was interesting. If you are not, you should be following us on YouTube already. Go hit subscribe there. If you're watching on YouTube, hello, how many fingers am I holding up? And you should also be sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you are listening. That will help us out tremendously as we continue to grow, because we're going to WrestleMania in like 6 weeks, 7 weeks. I'm going to be in the US of A.
Yeah. And we're already at like 200 subscribers on YouTube.
That's
more
right.
Than that.
So come join us,
guys,
and add to us more. It'll be great. Yeah.
Add more to that.
See all my shit posting. All right. What did you know about the Bushwhackers before this week?
I knew that the Sheepherders were a thing, and I knew that they were like a brutal tag team, apparently,
yes,
is what people had always said. But I'd never seen one of those Sheepherders matches. I have seen a bunch of Bushwhacker stuff just because they end up popping up on like YouTube compilations. Like if you ever look up like a funny YouTube thing, it's the Bushwhackers and it's like R-Truth.
And Honky Tonk Man. Yeah.
A lot of like Honky Tonk and Jimmy Hart and Jerry Lawler getting comeuppance.
Yes. I knew the same thing you did about how like their reputation pre-Bushwhackers as the Sheepherders or the Kiwis was essentially a brutal, like formidable tag team. And if you only had ever been exposed to them in WWF, you never really saw that side because they became like a family friendly act. Like that was the whole switch. So it was really big for them to instead be these like brutal heels for so long. And then it's like learning lore again. Like you didn't know before that these were cool people who did like death matches and shit. And instead it's just like, oh yeah, no, they just wave their arms like this.
It's like when you find out your parents are like were young at one point.
Yeah.
And, like,
and
had
they
their
had
own lives.
Hopes and dreams. Yeah.
And
we
like
talked about
did
this.
Cool stuff.
Yeah. My mom and her Judas Priest concerts.
Which is
so Luke Williams and Butch Miller started wrestling as the Kiwis for NWA New Zealand, later known as All-Star Pro Wrestling, in 1966. They also worked in Canada for various promotions. Of course, they made a stop in Stampede, billed as the Kiwis. For some reason, Miller was known as Nick Carter, like like the Backstreet Boy, which is very funny to me. And Luke Williams was known as Sweet William.
That one I like, actually.
I like Sweet
I
William.
I like that one. Sweet
That's
Williams.
Nice.
Listen, man, if Trick ever wants to change his name, which he shouldn't because he's already got the chant and it's a pretty slick name.
Yeah.
Sweet Williams is right there.
It's true. They returned to their home country of New Zealand in late 75. And then in 76, Williams returned to Japan for IWE. And then both men were inactive for a couple of years. So they kind of took a hiatus in the middle of this whole thing. They returned to wrestling in 1978, right in the end of the year. Made a stop in All Japan Pro Wrestling. and then returned to North America in late 79, where they worked for Pacific Northwest Wrestling. And that's where our first match takes place. 2 weeks in a row, our first match of the podcast is a Pacific Northwest match with Buddy Rose. This is the Sheepherders teaming with Playboy Buddy Rose against a very young Rowdy Roddy Piper, Ron Bass, and Dutch Savage. November 24th, 1979.
Young Roddy Roddy Piper.
Yes. Also, if you're wondering, Ron Bass is known here as Sam Oliver Bass, so he is SOB. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. It's not the Godwins, but it's good. Like, it's not quite Godwin's level.
Wait, what is the Godwin supposed to be?
Well, Henry O. Godwin and Phineas I. Godwin are hog and pig.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That's what you meant.
Yeah. So we've got a 2 out of 3 falls match. It's filmed on the first ever camcorder. It's the same quality as the Bigfoot film that you've all seen.
Yeah, except that at least you can see this one.
It's true. That's true. Bigfoot's all blurry.
I want to believe in Bigfoot. Really, I do. There is nothing that I would love more in this world than to believe that all these, like, mythologic, what are they called? There's, like, a word for them. Like, these, like, creatures exist. Yeah. Like, Bigfoot, Loch Ness, all this stuff. It's just, like, we've had, like, very smartphones for the last decade.
For a very long time.
And, like, we can scour. Has them. Yeah. You know? Even before that, we had, like, Blackberries and stuff. You tell me not one person could get a good photo of this?
The only thing that I think of is, like, if people like Victor Wembanyama can exist, like, maybe a Bigfoot is out there. That's all I'm saying. What did you think of this match?
I liked this, but I could see where somebody would watch this and be like, come on, man.
This is a very 70s, 80s wrestling match.
It's so 70s, 80s. It's, yeah.
There's not a lot that happens. Everything is very intentional. It's very methodical. You can watch this on 2.0 speed. You will catch every little thing that happens. You're not missing out. Yep. Also, Savage. He's not Randy Savage. It's Dutch Savage, I believe.
Great name.
It's a 16-time PNW heavyweight champion. That's what they said on commentary. So he is the Ric Flair of Portland.
Okay.
He's Damian Lillard.
Damn. Is he more valuable to the Pacific Northwest
than
Damian Lillard was? No. Is he more valuable to the Pacific Northwest than Ichiro? Ken Griffey? Ooh.
No, and definitely not Lillard, because how many times has Savage hit a dagger over Paul George and waved goodbye?
16, apparently. Oh, impressive. He's done it 16 times.
This match is so weird that it feels weird to go beat by beat because...
But we kind of could.
We could. It's almost 30 minutes in length in total. Like, we watched this in 3 parts. But there's almost, like, not much that happens aside from the finishes.
Yeah. I mean, I love the way the Sheepherders look. They look like absolute madmen in this. Like, the best way I could describe it for someone who's not going to watch this, which, I mean, you don't have to. But I would recommend it just because it's, like, cool. I personally think it's really cool to see matches from an era that's, like, really hard to find matches for.
Yeah.
Regardless of the match quality. Like, I just think this match is from 79. That's so cool to me.
Yeah.
They look kind of like a younger Terry Funk. Like, Funk when he had, like, the long curly hair.
Yeah.
Like, they have that. Especially Luke Williams has that. It's weird seeing Butch with hair.
Did you realize how to tell them apart?
Well, yeah, because Luke's a blonde and Butch is a dark-haired brunette.
Yeah, so Butch has the darker hair. Luke has the lighter hair. As we get further on, one of them has the... Butch has the bald spot.
Like, well, one is just... One is, listen, RIP, but Butch Miller's just not an attractive man. Like, it's very easy to tell them apart facially because Butch is just like...
Why do you look like the alien from the first Men in Black movie? Why do you look like Vincent D'Onofrio?
That's kind of what he looks like. He looks like the bad guy from from Popeye. Like Popeye's rival. That's what he looks like.
Bluto? Is that his name?
Sure. I have no idea. You could have said anything and I would believe you. Popeye. Like, that's just what he looks like. It's true. He's just like a very rugged,
yeah, Bluto,
not attractive human being. And that's okay, because he's very charismatic.
They're fighting over a woman named Olive Oil. All right. So in terms of the beginning of the match, in the moves that are worth talking about is a hot tag to Savage, which was all right.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
It's a lot of them working over Piper, but Piper were getting random bursts of offense.
Yes. Yeah. So Savage gets that hot tag. It's a lot of basic heel offense from the heels.
Yes. Yes.
Like, they're cutting the ring off. They're like, you know, if the babyfaces get an advantage of any sorts, like, you know, punching or like getting a kickoff, like someone in the corner would like snatch them by the leg or something and like,
yeah,
do something about it.
This is a very loose interpretation of the tag rules, by the way.
Yeah, they're just going in and out.
The ref has no control and is dressed in an Abercrombie polo. Like, he is just out to lunch.
Yeah. He's just not doing anything. That is a Foot Locker employee that they paid $2 to.
I miss when Foot Lockers actually look like locker rooms, but that's neither here nor there.
I'm into a Foot Locker in, like, time.
I fucking love going to shoe stores.
Actually, I went to a Foot Locker around this time last year when I was in New York, just because I was looking for New Balances, or this specific pair of New Balances.
Did you find them?
I found them online, but yeah. I think it was, I forget what company it was with, but it was one of those Foot Lockers, Foot Actions, whatever.
Yeah.
But I could not, I went to so many different stores that day and I could not. It was annoying. Anyways. We get the first fall somewhere here. Williams ends up hitting a power driver on Piper and gets the fall.
That's the first fall. In the second fall, the first thing of note that I have is when Rose accidentally hits Butch and Williams is left to fend off Piper, Bass, and Savage. Both try to get tagged. Both Bass and Savage try to get tagged in, and Bass comes in instead. Hits a big suplex. And this is when I realized that Buddy Rose, because last time we saw him with a mask on, right, and the fake wig, now I realize, I'm like, oh, you look like a combination of, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman and Louis Anderson. Like, if those two fused...
Louis Anderson, Jesus Christ.
It would be Playboy Buddy Rose in 1979.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, still the best actor at saying the word fuck.
Ooh.
Greatest fuck sayer in the history of cinema.
Samuel Jackson is alive, yeah, and
he says it a lot, and that's great. He loves the word motherfucker. But Philip Seymour Hoffman, any performance where he gets to drop an F-bomb, he's dropping that motherfucker.
So Samuel Jackson is more of a machine gun of fucks. But Philip Seymour Hoffman is more of like a sniper with his
Listen,
fucks.
You know what I would say? I would say that Samuel L. is like a good New York slice of pizza. You know?
Okay.
You can get them anywhere. They're all good. You love them.
They're all good.
You love them. They're like $2, like whatever each. But Philip Seymour Hoffman is like a pristine Neapolitano pizza. You can find one in New York. Maybe you can get a little knockoff in New York, but you gotta go to Italy for the real stuff. That's the quality. That's what he is.
Also, listeners, hit us up on social media and tell us what to eat in Philadelphia.
Well, we're like gonna get a Philly cheesesteak.
We're gonna get a Philly cheesesteak at some point, but tell us where to eat in Philadelphia at Crossbody of Work on Twitter, on Instagram, crossbodyworkpod@gmail.com. Tell us where to eat in Philly. Also, if you're going to Philly,
give me your phone number so they can text you, too.
Yeah, for sure. If you're going to Philly, tell us, and we'd love to meet up with people who listen to the podcast. That would be cool.
We'll be there.
The second fall that happens is... I don't even remember where this happens.
The second fall.
With a body slam to Rose.
Yeah. There's like a meeting of the minds on the sheep herders, or Bass does that, and then there's like a whole thing going on, and there's like a weird little like whatever, and then Bass just hits like it's a body slam, but it's kind of like a driving body slam.
Yeah,
like he kind of like spikes him a little bit, and yeah, they tie the falls with that. Before that, one of the weirdest things I've ever seen in wrestling happens.
Sure.
Which is the crowd doing a 10 count to side headlock cranks.
I didn't even clock that. Yeah, that is weird.
One, yeah, two, three. To a side headlock crank.
I would love for them, like, if you could transport people from that crowd to see Sheamus do beat to the ball, like, could you imagine how they'd react to seeing that?
No, instead? It's like, here's the thing, like, they're so invested in, you know, wrestling and all this stuff. Can you imagine if they just, like, saw Iho Devin King go wrestle one time?
I would love to show a 1979 person a clip, the clip of Ricochet getting super kicked on the moonsault by Adam Cole. And I just want to see what they think. I just want to see how they react. This is like the whole, like, I'd give a pilgrim like a Baja blast and watch their face explode. Like, it's one
you
of
know,
those.
I keep thinking, or I keep telling myself to do it, and I always forget to. I have to show my dad Will Ospreay versus Ricochet.
Yes. I showed people I work with. I was like,
my
hey,
father,
wrestling.
My father, who only watched wrestling in the 80s and very early 90s, and if when we were younger, would sometimes like sit down for 5 minutes with us.
My parents always came in the room when it was like the worst time. It'd be like Val Venus getting his dick cut off. And I'd be like, I don't know.
Chubby
pee-pee. There's a rule in Pacific Northwest Wrestling where whoever was in the fall last has to start the next fall and make physical contact before they can tag out. I like that. That's like a nice rule. Bass is essentially giving Rose a free shot, puts Rose in full Nelson, then gets accidentally hit by Miller. Everything breaks down. That's most of the third fall is just chaos. Yeah. And then there's a pin.
Things break down. Everyone's in the ring. Rose does a flying punch to someone. I didn't even clock who it was.
Yeah.
One, two, three. The heels win, and that's it. And then there's a promo, and it's a babyface promo from Roddy Piper. It sounds cool. I didn't really clock exactly
so
what he was
young.
Saying.
He sounds so young.
I don't know how old Piper was in 79, but he sounds like a child.
I'm going to look up how old Piper was in 79. The thing that I got from this match more than anything was even when they were brutal, the sheep herders, the bushwhackers, were still goofy. Like, there was a part where they were showing Buddy Rose that they didn't actually hit him, that it was all an accident. And there's always been like that goofy element that's in there, even if they are brutal. Also,
they are comedic sellers.
Piper was 25 years old.
Jesus. Yeah. They are very much comedic sellers. I will say that.
I guess he had been wrestling pretty consistently for about 6 years at this point.
And yeah. So, I mean, since he was 19. Jeez. Yeah.
Good for Roddy. So the Sheep Herders, they went to Mid-Atlantic Wrestling. They went to the WWC. After they left World Wrestling Council, Butch decided he wanted to return closer to home and went to Australia to wrestle. So Luke remained in the United States and was wanted to keep the Sheep Herders gimmick. So he started teaming up with Lord Jonathan Boyd, formerly of the Royal Kangaroos. The duo of Williams and Boyd quickly gained a reputation as a violent, hard-hitting team in the business. They went to Continental Wrestling. They went to Southwest Championship Wrestling. Boyd, a couple years in, legitimately broke his leg in a car accident, which forced Southwest Championship Wrestling to name Bobby Jaggers as a replacement. Elite level name. Bobby Jaggers.
Bobby. Okay. I mean, the Royal Kangaroos was an elite name, but Bobby Jaggers, that's like a straight out of NXT currently.
That's true. Yeah. Except his real name is Robert Francis Jodwin. And he was an American professional wrestler and civil engineer. Shout out to Bobby Jaggers.
I have heard what a civil engineer is a million times, and I have no idea what they do.
I have no idea. Shoot us an email about what a civil engineer does.
I'm not Googling it.
CrossbodyWorkPod@gmail.com. Shoot us emails. Send us DMs about what a civil engineer does. After Williams and Jagger lost a non-title match to Bob Sweeten and Sweet Brown Sugar, Williams turned on Jagger and the titles were vacated. While Boyd was out with a broken leg, Williams reunited with Butch as Butch came from Australia. They reunited in Southwest Championship Wrestling, and again they went back to Puerto Rico for the World Wrestling Council.
Sweet Brown Sugar.
And then participated in the first ever Crockett Cup, and that is where our next match takes place. 1986. It is April 19th, 1986, and it is the Sheep Herders versus Bobby Fulton and Tommy Rogers, the Fantastics, in the third round of the Crockett Cup.
This feud fed families in 86, from what I read.
Yes. Tag wrestling probably peaked in the 80s. And I say this as someone who didn't really watch it.
Yeah.
Obviously, because I wasn't alive. But from what I heard, in terms of like just the competitiveness between teams, even things like, you know, the Von Erichs versus the Freebirds, yeah. like tag team wrestling.
Just these main events, promotion carrying feuds happening between tag teams.
Can I give you the list of teams that were in the first ever Crockett Cup?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Just some names that we know. Bobby Jaggers and Mike Miller. No, it doesn't matter about him. The Fabulous Ones, The Fantastics, Ronnie Garvin and Magnum TA, Los Guerreros being Chavo Senior, or Chavo Classic, and Hector, which is very cool. Terry Taylor and Steve Williams. Of course, the Sheep Herders. Ivan and Nikita Koloff. The Rock and Roll Express. The Road Warriors. The Midnight Express. Giant Baba and Tiger Mask were a team. Arn Anderson and Tully were in here. Black Bart and Jimmy Garvin. Dino Bravo and Rick Martel. Like, it was stacked.
Did the Brain Busters win?
The Road Warriors won.
Oh, right. I didn't hear their names.
And since it was a bracket, let me tell you about how both the Sheep Herders and Fantastics got to this point. The Sheep Herders beat Los Guerreros in the first round, and then the Rock and Roll Express in the second round.
Ooh!
As a back-to-back, that's pretty nuts.
Beating the Rock and Roll Express that early is, honestly, that's like, oh, we have faith in you guys.
Yeah. The Fantastics beat the Fabulous Ones in round one, and then Tully and Arn in round two. Yeah.
That's a rocket strap if I've ever seen one to a
winner of this
team.
Winner of this match goes on to face the Road Warriors in the semis. This is my recommendation of the week.
Yeah, this was rated 5 stars by Dave Meltzer.
Yes, this has intensity. It has storytelling. It also has that weird je ne sais quoi quality that I can't quite describe of filming things in the 80s. I don't know what it is. Yes. There's something about it. It looks so good.
It
looks
great.
Like,
it's not grainy. It just looks like it has like a cool filter on it.
Yes. It's cinematography. It's like it's straight out of, like, somebody shot this on a camera. Like, Christopher Nolan's back there and he's like working the actual angles. I don't know what it is. It's,
you know,
so
what
good,
I
though.
Think it is, though. It's one of those. Well, I know what it is for me. For me, it's that I grew up on movies from the 80s. Like, literally, all of the VHSs that I had at home that we were constantly watching because of my dad were just all movies from the 80s and, like, early 90s. And, like, that style of film and filmmaking, like, just the way things looked, that's, like, something that always appeals to me because it's, like, yeah, that's what I grew up on. Like, don't get me wrong. I love the Christopher Nolan, like, just freaking 70 millimeter IMAX level quality of filmmaking and those look absolutely stunning, but it's like a little, it's near and dear to my heart, that old that ye old 80s style from literally 40 years ago.
That's the way it felt. There's also no commentary on this clip, and
I thought that actually kind of helped
because I didn't realize how much I feel this way about these clips. When there's no commentary, I feel like I'm there more than, like, because that's the big difference between like watching sports in real life and watching sports on TV is having commentary, and commentary adds to it. Like, when commentary is good, commentary is a necessary function for storytelling in wrestling. I understand that, but every once in a while, as a break, watching it with no commentary is so relaxing. Like, it you're very invested. Like, I was fully engrossed in what I was watching.
Are you ready for the main event of night two of WrestleMania when I have my AirPods in listening to Michael Cole's call of Cody versus Roman?
That will be very funny. I like it. I thought you were gonna tell me what the main event of, like, the night here was, and I was like, well, it's obviously the Crockett Cup Finals, which was the Road Warriors beating Magnum TA and Ron Garvin.
Were the Road Warriors, would they have been baby faces at that point?
I think so.
Were they ever heels? Now that I think about it, every time I think of the Road Warriors, they're baby faces. So.
Not really. No.
They're just like really tough baby faces.
So Matt starts with the Fantastics reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
Which is such a Bobby Fulton, what are we doing
here? That's one way to get the team on your side, even though it, like, they're against the Kiwis anyways. Like,
yeah,
they're fully against these wacky Kiwis. If you're watching this match, as you should, this is the recommendation, I assume, for you too.
Yes, yeah.
Bobby Fulton is the blonde one, for those of you keeping score at home. And Butch has the bald spot. It's the easiest way to tell them apart when they're in the ring. It's the easiest way. It's the easiest way.
Butch is just the really ugly one. Like, I just have to keep
that's
saying.
That's worse than what I said.
Yeah, I mean, you're listen, man. He can't help that he has a bald spot. It's just what his hair does.
He also can't help if he's an ugly son of a gun.
No, he can do something about that. He can do something about it.
Fulton is getting isolated in the corner. Lots of headlocks, lots of shoulder blocks. We get a drop kick by Fulton. Another in comes Rogers. He gets a drop kick as well. Rogers in with a headlock. Sunset flip to Luke, and then he flips Butch into the ring. And so the Sheepherders on the defensive for a little bit.
Yeah, Butch does just one of the most hilarious sells to an atomic drop I have ever seen in my life.
Yep.
He like eats it, and then he's like sliding into the corner. He's like, oh, and then he slides out of the ring. He's like dying. It's great. The Fantastics here, like, the story early on is just that the Fantastics are too fast, too energetic, yes, like too lively. And the Sheepherders are more of a methodical, like,
wear really you down,
interconnected, yeah, team, like, wear you down. They work in tandem most of the time. Like, they don't really care about the referees, you know. They'll try to force the referee's discretion more often than not, stuff like that. Yeah. And the Bobby Fulton, really, because Tommy Rogers doesn't really have much of a hand early on here.
No, Tommy's not really involved.
Is the one who's just like, boom, 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 we're going super fast. Yeah.
Weirdly, Fulton and Rogers remind me a little bit of how our brains remember Jeff and Matt. Where Jeff Hardy is the one who's like, boom, boom, doing stuff. And Matt Hardy would come in and be like, a little slower version, but I'm still doing stuff.
You know what this is? This just reminds me of Darby and Sting,
who are going to lose the titles, obviously, in Sting's last match.
Yeah, sure. But also just super fast as fuck, boy. And then just, you know, mythology.
I'm going to let you try it again.
Methodology.
Mesothelioma? Like, what are we doing here?
Methodology. That's the word.
Mathematics. All right. We end up on the outside.
Mathematics.
Dropkick to Butch, and a brawl breaks out on the outside. Rogers over there. He's whipping Sheepherders into barricades. We get a big clothesline to Fulton, who had been tossed into the into the ring post, and is a bloody mess.
Gushing. In the ring, Luke Williams bites the cut.
He just gnawed on it. He's hungry.
Gnaws on that motherfucker. I got a taste for blood, baby.
I like this spot. I like these spots where there's the phantom tag. Rogers tries to tag in. Ref doesn't see. Ref should have seen from that angle, but of course I know they're playing it up. So,
hey, what if he's like 45% blind in that eye? You know?
Matter of fact, I don't even see you, sir. Fulton runs Luke into Butch holding the New Zealand flag. Getting involved.
Yeah, except, you know, Fulton stops it. He puts his leg up, so he stops it, and then he drops Butch right into that motherfucker.
Hot tag to Rogers. Rate the hot tag.
Like a 5.5.
A 5 is where I think it belongs.
It's just like a mad babyface hot tag.
It's too many right hands. It's a
cool flying punch. There's a cool flying punch in there.
But 75% of it is just right hands.
Yeah. And not even like good look, like really good. Like, normal. If you come in very with average, like, you know, just some, you're giving some sweet old haymakers, I'm here for a Stone Cold underneath, you know, just. By the way, can we all agree that Stone Cold Steve Austin has like the weirdest delivery of a punch in wrestling history?
It's weird, but it's good.
It works because he's like literally stiffing most of the time, but he's just coming from down here. It's weird. Anyways, it's just like a normal thing. On the outside, Luke Williams and Jack Victory, who's with the Sheepherders, are just messing up Fulton.
Yeah.
Just messing him up. Rodgers is in the ring whooping Miller, but not really paying attention to the outside. Then the ref takes a ball. I don't know what happened to the ref. I didn't see that.
The ref ends up on the outside because Butch throws Fulton at the ref, and the ref, and Fulton takes the ref out to the ring with him. Like, so he gets knocked out that way. Okay. Sheepherders get the flagpole. They're cracking Rodgers over the head with it. Fulton trips up Butch to stop him. Rodgers cracks victory with the flagpole. Another referee comes out, and it's a double DQ.
Yes, the turntables.
So that's how the Road Warriors would get to the semifinals, is because they didn't have to have, like, or they get to the finals. They didn't have to have a semifinals match because this was going to be the semifinals.
You know what the Road Warriors didn't need? A bye.
You're probably right. You ready for what I think is the weirdest sounding match on the whole card that I kind of want, which I could see?
Is it like Magnum TA and who is his partner?
Ron Garvin.
And Ron Garvin versus, like, I don't know.
It's Baba and Tiger Mask. I want to see that. I love that. That's an interesting match.
Original Tiger Mask is great, man.
Yeah. And like 86 Baba, like, that's okay. You could still do stuff with 86 Baba.
I mean, you could really do stuff with 76 Baba.
It's mean to Baba. All right, we're going to take a break. When we get back, the sheep herders begin to get a little more goofy. Back from the break, we have some Memphis wrestling. It is the Fabulous Ones and Paul Diamond versus the sheep herders with Jonathan Boyd.
I mean, technically, it's just the sheep herders.
Yeah.
Because Jonathan Boyd was a sheep herder.
He's a sheep herder. Yeah. So they just have him lumped in. The Fabulous Ones are Stan Lane and Steve Kern. And if you're wondering, this match has barbed wire.
Yeah, there's barbed wire wrapped around the ring. It's kind of cool.
This is the hardest match to tell the Bushwhackers apart.
Oh, it's just because the quality.
It's the angle and the quality. Yeah. But it's the hardest one to be like, I think that's Butch. But you can't see. They have the same graphics as like The Sims 2.
Yeah, but I could kind of do it just because, like, I turned up my brightness, honestly. And yeah, I guess I'm better than you.
And I know it.
There's barbed wire everywhere, and the match, so the clip starts with the match already starting,
yeah,
but it's like literally seconds into it.
Just started, yeah.
Yeah, like it had just started. Luke Williams is just rubbing. I couldn't tell who it was because their head was in the barbed wire.
Yeah.
But some dude's head was in the barbed wire.
I would say the sheep herders, this is when people talk about, like, oh, they were a brutal tag team back in the day. This is a match you would show them because, like, they are ruthless with the barbed wire. The kind of, like,
yeah,
just it was very consistent. They didn't do anything like particularly evil, but everything they did was like malicious and constant. It was, you're in the barbed wire. If they're on top, like, you're in the barbed wire, you're getting punched. They're not, they're like pulling at cuts. Like, they're doing that, yeah, kind of stuff. Yeah.
It's a lot. It's not a good time for anyone that's in the matches with them when there's an outside element to it. Like, if they're just going and they can have weapons or barbed wire or whatever the hell needs to be involved. And if blood is going to be involved, you do not want to be on the opposite side of the sheep herders.
No, because they will make you bleed. It's that Marshawn Lynch, like I'm going to get got, but I'm going to get mine too. Like, they're like, yeah, you could beat us.
I'm going to get some before I get got or whatever.
It's a good clip. I fucking love Marshawn Lynch. There's also some light choking, you know, like, there's the American flag.
Boy, I mean, grabs, who doesn't American like flag? A little bit of light choking?
Yeah. You know, breath play. Chokes Lane with it. The ref takes it from him. The ref is like, you can't kill him. And Boyd just forearms the ref in the face. The ref just eats it. He doesn't move. This is the strongest ref in the world.
I think it wasn't supposed to happen. Like, I think he just kind of got confused and like, not confused, but I think he just thought it was another wrestler. And so he like did it. And then the ref was like, oh, that wasn't supposed to happen. So I'm no selling it.
This ref is the Japanese tiny tables of referees. Just so built different, so strong, not breaking, will not go down.
My favorite spot of the match is Butch just hitting the ropes and coming off of it with punches, like for extra oomph on his punches. When I say he's hitting the ropes, I'm not saying like, oh, he's in the ropes like fucking Shotzi or like, so, you know, some of these people who like hit the ropes and then like the rope barely moves. Yeah. I mean, he's getting deep in there. He's 100% going into the barbed wire.
Yes.
No selling the barbed wire just to get extra oomph into his punches.
It's such a dumb idea. I love it.
It's great.
All the baby faces start to fire up at the same time. Like Lane, Kern, and Diamond all start firing up. Right hands, they send the sheep herders into barbed wire. Luke gets busted open. Bad. Butch is run into the barbed wire. Luke is put on the middle rope and wrapped in barbed wire. Butch gets a noose around his neck. I was like, what is going
Boyd
on?
Boyd gets caught in the barbed wire. And legitimately, I think he might have been caught.
Been caught.
It looked like his, like the backside of his, like, I don't know if he's wearing a singlet or like a.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I think it's a singlet.
But like his shirt or the top layer of it is just like, it looks like it's being pulled like this and he can't really get it off.
Like it's not a Sabu level caught. Like he didn't lose a tricep, but like he's definitely stuck there.
Like his limbs are fine, but his clothing is not.
His mind is not.
Lane super kicks Luke into the wire.
Yes. This is also, honestly, if you want 10 minutes of like fun action, go watch this match.
Yeah, this is just hilarious. Like, that's
unintentionally, and it's funny because it's so brutal. The pin, one Bushwhacker is pushed into another who is in fallaway slam position, gets knocked over into the pin for the win.
Yes.
Sure. What an interesting finish.
Hey, man. You know, we love a baby face going on top, but in hilarious fashion.
December of 88. Williams and Miller debuted in the WWF in the midst of aggressive national expansion, as we know. The team's name was changed to the Bushwhackers and developed a more comedic style. The comedy act involved licking each other, fans, even their opponents, as well as using their existing distinctive march, swinging their fixed arms. It was a lot of this. They would debut on a matinee house show on Boxing Day 1988 facing the Bolsheviks, and that's actually where our next match is. It's not the debut. But it's about a month later, and it's the Bushwhackers versus the Bolsheviks from January of 1989.
Did I mess up? Because I put the Rougeaus first.
You did, and that's okay. I forgot to tell you before we started recording that you did put them in the wrong order, but that's okay. We'll talk about the Rougeaus. We'll talk about the Rougeaus in a minute. We want to talk about how they get here, but this is at the Philadelphia Spectrum in 89, January. The Bushwhackers are stomping out here and are immediately called Australian.
You know, by the way, going by the name The Bolsheviks is crazy.
It's wild in the 80s. It's like wild.
This is it's post-Cold War.
But like
by year.
But like it just happened.
Does this mean that Nikolai Volkoff is like kayfabe a communist?
I think every person who portrayed a Russian in like the last like 50 years in wrestling is is kayfabe a communist.
Depends on their opinions on regicide, because that's how we got here with the Bolshevik Revolution.
Look at you giving some deep Russian history cuts.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, I paid attention to world history in high school.
Our world history was just, we just focused on you guys. We were like, all right, what did the Americans do? The answer, they invaded us once and never again. War of 1812, baby.
I was like confused for a second there. I was like, what? Yeah.
Yeah, we burned your White House. That
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's the least nice thing Canada's ever done. But no, also,
residential schools for Indigenous people. That's the least nice thing we've ever done.
All right, I meant to like other people.
Oh, like those people who aren't like, in the confines of Canada?
Yeah, like you know, the Indigenous Canadians are still Canadian. They were before you guys.
They were Indigenous people first, and then Canadians were complete dicks to them. Also, apparently, like most of the war crimes that people learned about from World War One, like Canada, like thought of. So, yeah, it's a weird part that's not talked about in our history. But like, we were like, you know how you think of like, oh, we need to bring in like crazy sons bitches to win this war. Apparently, those were the Canadians who just volunteered to go to World War One, and were like, yeah, we're gonna mess some shit up.
I guess the nicest people truly are the craziest ones.
That's true. Don't make me go crazy. What'd you think of this match?
I mean, this is just like your bog standard WWF in the late 80s match, is it not?
It's a goofy break.
it's
from whatever fun. Else was happening during the rest of the card. This is a goofy break.
Yeah, I mean, listen, one of my notes here is literally, what is this Three Stooges offense right now?
Yes, yes, they look like they are lost Three Stooges. So,
like, they just do the eye poke. They do, yeah. Like, fall. Like, at one point, I think Butch does, like, a drop, and Zhukov runs right into Volkov. And I was like, okay. Also, Boris Zhukov, I'd never heard of this individual before.
Yeah.
I should have sooner. This is a fantastic wrestler. I loved everything this man did.
This is your Rob Terry moment. The Bushwhackers, like, they attack from behind. They run the Bolsheviks into another.
They do back rakes.
Thumb to the eye.
They back raked them.
Double clothesline by the Bushwhackers. I forgot. I didn't know which Bushwhacker it was. They drop to the mat, and like the two Bolsheviks run into another, like you said. There's a long-ish bear hug spot where Luke's,
oh my God.
Luke's reaction is, I'm just going to... eat this man.
Now, so he puts on a bear hug, then Luke pops his head Luke pops his head, he puts it on again after a little bit, and then Luke bites his nose, and then he puts it on a third time. Butch comes in and starts biting his hamstring.
This is the Walking Dead. That's what this is. It's just zombies. This is eating.
It's just Andrew Linking sweating in an abandoned hospital.
Carl Zhukov with a choke while Volkov distracts. It is when the USA chants start.
You know, my thing, right, is these guys are New Zealanders who are being portrayed as Australian for some reason.
Yes.
Who are somehow adopted by America as Americans, even though they are very much not Americans, because apparently we hate the Russians more than we hate the Australians. So therefore, we're going to say make USA chants in favor of the Bushwhackers, who, based on their name alone, are clearly not American.
Exactly.
It's, you know, it happens.
Magnifique. No notes.
No notes. Volkov hits a spinning back chop, which I need Gunther to do tomorrow.
What about the spin kick that goes a foot off the ground by Volkov?
That was the chop.
Was that the chop?
He ends up just chopping him.
He's 100% going for a spin kick.
You know, he means to do the kick, but he realizes that his foot's not going to get up, so he also swings a chop.
This is going to be a fat guy moment. Have you ever like been going up a hill or a flight of stairs or whatever?
And every single every point in my life, even when I was like super well fit and conditioned from soccer. There has never been a point in my life where I was able to go up a flight of stairs without feeling a little tired.
But have you ever done the thing where you get to the top and to mask being winded, you yawn?
No. I just
that's a vet maneuver.
I purposefully just start breathing slower.
Yeah, I mean, I tried that, didn't work. So I'm just getting to the top of the flight of stairs and I'm like and it just turned into a yawn, and then everything's like, all right. And then it gives me time to kind of catch. And, like, that's what he did here by switching to a chop.
It's like, at that point, just breathe heavy, man.
Just breathe heavy. Just breathe heavy.
Butch punches the Russians. So the Russians are both double-teaming in the corner on Luke. Like, they're both punching Luke in the corner. They're both in the ring. Butch comes from behind. He punches Nikolai. He punches Boris. And then he punches Luke.
These hands are rated E for everyone. Like, if they are communists, we got to make sure that it goes equally to every person.
And at one point, are you saying the Bushwhackers are communists?
Well, no, they want to just respect what the Bolsheviks are doing.
They're nice guys. They're nice guys. These boys, right here, these are good boys. You see, these kids over here, these Russian boys, right?
Good
boys. They want to be communists. And that means that they share everything, right?
So everybody gets punched.
Even if they're not communists, these kids, these good New Zealand boys, they punch everybody too, even each other. Can you believe that?
Zhukov, speaking of them punching each other, accidentally clotheslines Volkov out of the ring. We then get the battering ram from the Bushwhackers, where one of them puts the other in a headlock, and they run into the person, and that's it. Then they do a double atomic drop, and then that wins the match.
Well, it's a double gut buster.
Yeah, it's more of a gut buster.
They extend their knees out. They drop the guts on the knees, and yeah, they win.
We're going to take a break. When we get back, the Bushwhackers make it to WrestleMania. Back from the break, in February of 89, the Bushwhackers began a feud with the Fabulous Rougeau Brothers, which led to the first real feud on WWF TV for the Bushwhackers and would lead to a WrestleMania 5 match against the Rougeaus. The Rougeaus are here with Jimmy Hart and some of the greatest drip known to mankind, blue sparkly coats looking like something that Ken decided not to wear that day.
But he's just Ken.
The Bushwhackers debuted in, like I said, on a house show, Boxing Day of 88. They made a TV debut in January. It's March. They're over as fuck.
I mean, listen.
Unbelievable. This is fandangoing of the highest order. Like,
nah, straight up.
They are so over here. It's
there are people
crazy.
Literally dressed like them with yeah. black tank tops and military camo shorts. Or,
yeah, and just
pants.
Shaved heads. No, they didn't shave their heads.
No, Evan, that's just called male pattern baldness.
Sponsor us, Roman. just trying to get the bag. They chase down Jimmy Hart. They steal his jacket. They're going to tear it in half, which would be very funny. I wouldn't be surprised if the Bushwhackers ate their jacket. Like, if they were like, we're ripping it in half so we can both eat it. That's just what they would do. Hart gets caught in between the Bushwhackers as the Rougeaus stop it. They whip the Rougeaus into one another with Hart being sandwiched between. Then the match starts, and it's fine.
Yeah, I mean we get a battering ram pretty early to Jock. I forget his name.
Raymond Rougeau.
The ref gets distracted by something in Pierre's boot for some reason. Yeah. I don't know what the heck's going on there. And then Butch distracts the ref a lot for some reason, allowing the Rougeaus to put on a Boston crab. With stomps, like one has the Boston crab on and the other one's stomping away. We got a double clothesline for a near fall, double axe handles for a near fall. Pierre puts on an abdominal stretch, and then we get to the finish. This is a quick match.
Yeah, it's the battering ram.
A battering ram into the double gut buster. And the ref has his back turned while all this is happening, but manages to turn around just in time to pin. 1, 2, 3, the Bushwhackers win at WrestleMania. And you know who hasn't won at WrestleMania?
Who?
Us.
Not yet.
But we ain't been there yet.
But we will. We'll be there.
We're coming.
I know we've said this before. I know we've talked about WrestleMania 5 before briefly. It still blows my mind. How many matches do you think are on this card?
God, I don't even remember the main event of it.
This is when the mega powers explode. This is Hogan's match.
Yeah. Are there six matches?
Higher.
Oh God. I thought you were gonna say it was a surprise, like because it's so little. No. 12.
14.
Damn, did Tony Khan book that card?
There are 14 different matches on this card. This one came on fourth. It's not even the first tag match of the show. There are, what is that, four different tag matches on the show? 1, 2, 3, 5 tag matches on the show. Ooh,
did
this is
Tony
a fun game.
Did Tony Khan book this?
Rank the Bushwhackers among the other tag teams on this card. Ready?
Okay.
You don't need to rank the other tag teams. Just tell me
they're
where
they're already the above the Rougeaus.
So, there's the Rougeaus. There's the Twin Towers, Akeem and Bossman. There's the Rockers. There's Demolition. There's the Powers of Pain, so Warlord and Barbarian. There's Arn and Tully, Brainbusters. There's Strike Force, Tito and Rick Martel. There's the Hart Foundation, so Brett and Jim. Yeah. And Rhythm and Blues, Greg Valentine and Honky Tonk Man. How many teams would you take the Bushwhackers over?
So there are 5 teams I would take over them.
Let me see if I can get them. You're going to take the Rockers over them.
Yeah.
You're going to take the Brainbusters over them.
Yeah.
You're going to take Strike Force over them.
Yeah.
Hart Foundation.
Yeah.
And I know you don't like Demolition. Are you taking Demolition?
No.
Powers of Pain?
No.
Twin Towers.
Yes.
Okay. So like that combo. Bushwhackers will be sixth. Okay, that's fair. I think that's a fair spot.
Out of them. What was it? 10?
Out of 10. Yeah.
They're in the middle.
That's fair. Put some comedy guys in the middle. Speaking of guys in the middle, let's talk about the promo this week. It's the Bushwhackers and Andre, and it's just the Bushwhackers screaming for a minute.
Whoa! Nash, what is it? I can't really do their accent. I'm sorry. I can't even try it. I tried doing an Australian accent yesterday while I was at my Valentine's Day dinner with my girlfriend. And
what a treat you were for dinner.
And it just came out British. It just always comes out British.
I mean, they used to be British. New Zealand, the only way you can do the New Zealand accent is just by doing Flight of the Conchords. Like, that's the only way that I can even get close. No. Do you know Flight of the Conchords, the band?
Not. Oh, no.
Oh, my God. Great, great comedy duo band. You would know the voice of the one guy because he was the crab, the shiny singer.
Valkyries. What am I doing?
Yeah, the shiny singer from Moana. With the crab who sings shiny.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of the... Well, that's one of the Flight of the Conchords guys. They have some very funny songs.
I like it.
Shout out to people who listen to Flight of the Conchords. I know some of you are out there.
Nobody's out there.
The Bushwhackers are screaming about SummerSlam and having the eighth wonder of the world on their side.
So they're facing the natural disasters.
Yes.
They say it'll be a disaster at SummerSlam. I can't.
It's not going to happen for you.
Scottish, Irish, and British. I don't know what the hell that was.
It was the Commonwealth.
So it was Welsh. It'll be a disaster at SummerSlam because while they're like, because even though they're big, they have the eighth wonder of the world in their corner. It's Andre the Giant, who's just between them. Then I have no idea what Andre said. I could not understand a single word that Andre the Giant said. And that's not really his fault. It's just the fact that he's French. I have never been able to understand the French. Like,
I understand Andre the Giant perfectly in The Princess Bride. I do.
Do you?
Yes, I think I could pick it up. Like, Andre would unfortunately pass away in, a couple of years?
I mean...
Like, he passed away in 93.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at this point, he's not moving. He's just talking.
Yeah, I know. It's just, I don't know. Andre's clearly excited. He's talking about how he's going to be in their corner. If you're wondering, the Bushwhackers were easily defeated at SummerSlam 91 by the Natural Disasters. We've seen the Natural Disasters form, because we've covered this.
No. Wait. Yes.
Yeah.
That match is when they form?
No. The match where they form is when Fred Ottman, a.k.a. Tugboat, a.k.a. Typhoon, a.k.a. the Shockmaster.
Oh, yeah. No, that we saw.
That six-man tag match against the Nasty Boys. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. That I remember. I was like, okay. So we didn't cover that match, though.
We didn't cover that match, but we covered Tugboat becoming Typhoon.
Yeah. I was confused for a second there. I was like, what? How long was that match at SummerSlam?
I'm going to set the over-under at 3.5 minutes. What do you think?
I think it's a slight over.
It's a hard over. 6.5 minutes.
Oh, good on Butch and Luke.
It's the shortest match on the main card at 6.5 minutes.
What's the matches on the not main card?
Coco Beware defeating Kato in a dark match.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The next shortest match, IRS beating Greg Valentine. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, what a great time. Longest match, Bret Hart, Mr. Perfect. Great match. Go watch it. SummerSlam 91. So the Bushwhackers would leave WWF in 1996. Their last match as a team was September 8th, 2001 in Farmville, Virginia. Miller would retire from wrestling in 2001 after a neck injury. And Williams retired in 2002, but come out of retirement in 2007 when he worked Ring of Honor. It says he worked for Ring of Honor, did appearances in New Zealand, and worked for Ultimate Championship Wrestling in Nova Scotia, Canada.
Luke,
you're looking up him and ROH.
So I'm looking this up.
I'll keep talking. You look him up. He still occasionally wrestles on independent shows in the U.S. As of time of writing, at 75 years old. Unfortunately, Butch Miller, on the 2nd of April, 2023, passed away at the age of 78. That was actually on WrestleMania weekend. He had traveled to Florida for WrestleMania weekend to do the cons.
That was a tough one, man.
Yeah. Have you found the Ring of Honor stuff?
No. And I am... oh, yes. I saw Kenny King's name. Hold on. And then decided to load.
So he did have matches in ROH. That's crazy. This is like when the Headbangers were in ROH.
From March of 2008 to April of 2009.
I mean, what a vet to bring into the locker room, even.
Mash here.
This is like when basketball players talk about having Kevin Willis on the bench. And they're just like, experienced vet.
Yeah, I mean, he had at least 5 matches. I'm over here looking. He had a tag match at Southern Hostility with Grizzly Redwood against David Crist and Jay Crist.
Okay.
And they won that match, by the way.
Love that.
He was in the Honor Rumble in July of 2008. He was at Supercard of Honor. He was in a 6-way tag. Jason Rance, Kenny King, and Sal Renaro defeated them. It's Alex Payne, Luke, and Dingo.
Dingo ate my baby.
Dingo.
What did you think, going back and looking at the career of the Bushwhackers?
This is great. I had a great time.
This was great.
Listen, whether it's the brutal stuff, or the Sheep Herders, or just the you know, heel tag team Sheep Herders, or the babyface crazy oddballs in WWF, whatever it is, these guys gave it 100% every single time. They were truly committed to the characters, truly committed to the bit. And like I said, I mean, these, even when they were in like a heel team, they still had incredible comedic selling.
Yes, they were always a little goofy.
Yeah, and that, I can see how they made the turn to a goofy babyface team. It's because they pulled it off so damn well. I mean, you don't have a run in the WWF for damn near a decade without that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You gotta have the juice.
Yeah, and they were over too. Like, it's, you know, they were a good team, and. They are the type of team that wrestling needs. You know, yes. it's just two guys who are so damn entertaining, can switch it on a dime and be serious if they have to be. Like, it's like the New Day, you know? Like,
yeah, the New Day did it different, but
they did it obviously to like an elite level, because individually they're all elite level performers. Yeah. But like, they came together, they were goofy, they were fun, they were entertaining. When they had to switch it on, they did, and they did it to the highest level. And you know, like, wrestling just needs people like that, and it works. It just does.
I'm just counting, just between Miller and Williams, just that combination of the Sheep Herders, the Bushwhackers, 26 different tag team championship reigns across a variety of promotions. Never a title. I remember when they got announced for the Hall of Fame. Because they were in the WWE Hall of Fame 2015. There were some people who were like, the Bushwhackers were a comedy gimmick, da da da. And that's where the kind of narrative of like, you have no idea what the Bushwhackers were before they got to the WWF. Yeah. And
they were them guys.
Like, every, you know, when you see those old maps of what the territories look like, they won the tag titles in all of them. Like, Southwest, Stampede, Pacific Northwest, Mid-Atlantic Championship, All-Star Wrestling, Continental Wrestling, Can-Am Wrestling. Doesn't matter. They're the tag champs at some point.
It's true.
Crazy good. I got an appreciation because I only knew them as like the used to be the quickest elimination in the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
They licked people. It was a super goofy gimmick. That was it. Going back and watching the old stuff just gives an appreciation for like, they can do more than just that. And they should be remembered for the totality of their career, not just the WWF stuff.
Remember, everybody, we call this podcast Cross Body of Work.
The whole body of work.
The whole shebang.
The whole kit and caboodle. All right. Let's do the housekeeping stuff. You should go to fullpresswrestling.com to watch all the links for this week's matches. Of course, the recommendation is going to be the second match against the Fantastics. Fabulous Ones was the other one. So the Fantastics match.
Honestly, either one of those two.
Either one of those is pretty good. Just there's something about that Fantastics match with the camera work. It's just so good.
So good.
Fullpressshop.com, cop the merch, support the boys. New merch store coming soon to a theater near you. Going to be some cool new drops with the new logos. Very excited for that. Follow us on social media. Follow Javier wherever he tells you right now.
At the Twitter machine, at JMello Sports, lob the boy a follow like this.
You can follow me at It's Evan Gomes, ITSEVANGOMES. Follow the podcast, most importantly, on Twitter, on Instagram, at Crossbody of Work. Join the over 4,100 people following us already on Instagram for all of our weird content. Of course, if you'd like all this weird content, also subscribe to the YouTube. We have, of course, the full episodes of all the podcasts end up on YouTube. As well, we have our different custom content. We just did our first series of Guess the Wrestler by the Titles. That's a fun episode. Go and watch that. It's a brand new gimmick that we're doing. It's really fun.
An iconic moment happened on that episode.
One of the greatest pulls of all time happened on that episode. Of course, we're going to be coming back soon with another one of our crossbody drafts. We're going to have some crossbody corrections soon where we rebook bad things from wrestling history. Also, check out our Elimination Chamber predictions. Those will be going up before Elimination Chamber starts at 5 a.m. Eastern time.
There is no freaking way I'm watching that thing live.
I'm going to watch it on a delay. I genuinely think I might get up for like 7 and just like watch it on a delay and do that.
No shot. I will watch it at like noon. I'll just not open up Twitter. It's fine.
I get up at 7 o'clock anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Of course, if you're listening to us on a podcast platform, thank you for doing that. But also you should hit subscribe. You should give us a 5-star rating. We'd appreciate it very much. In the 5-star rating, tell us people you want us to cover. Also, DM us people you want us to cover on the show. We've got 200 and some odd episodes. We're not stopping, so tell us who else you want us to see. Next week, a TNA knockout. Somebody with a long and illustrious career in terms of being like one of the stalwarts of TNA, I think. That, like, when I think of the TNA knockouts division, I kind of think of her. Not first, but like third.
The Trailer Park Queen.
ODB is the topic of next week's episode. We've seen ODB in the Gail Kim episode and the Awesome Kong episode. I immediately was like, I am sold on the character work. So I'm excited for 5 matches of ODB.
And she's damn good, man.
She's damn good. It's true. It's damn true. All right. It's time for everyone's favorite part of the podcast. Javier, any final words for the people?
This week on Life Advice with Javier, we're recording this on February 15th.
We are.
It's been 20 years since my favorite moment in wrestling history, which was when Eddie Guerrero beat Brock Lesnar for the WWE Undisputed title. It's great. It's one of the best moments. We covered it again in episode 200 a few weeks back. We covered it in our first episode that we've ever done for this podcast. I love everything about that moment. I watched it all over again today, not the full length match, but just the final like 5 minutes of it. And just the emotions that thing brings in me, man. It's such a great feeling seeing that over again. I said it in episode 200. I'll say it again. We don't do this podcast without me watching that match.
Yeah.
Like, we just don't, because the way that moment, like, everything that moment meant to me.
Cemented, you know, it.
He's my favorite wrestler, and it's, like, just the levels of it for me personally. Like, Brock Lesnar is what made me watch wrestling from the beginning, because I was just watching him throw people around effortlessly, and I was like, what's that? And, like, you know, Eddie was the guy who hooked me in, all this stuff. So, for Eddie Guerrero, a Latino, like, you look at the main event scene at that time, it's Triple H, you know, Rock would come in, you know, you got your Austins, your Kurt Angles, all this stuff.
Your takers,
like,
yeah.
Your taker for Eddie, like a Latino, a guy who's like me, to get that title, win it, like, that meant so much to me. and just everything about it. So my life advice this week, go appreciate that. And also, if you've got your favorite match, your favorite moment in wrestling history, whatever it may be, don't wait for the anniversary to go watch it. Just go pull it up now. Just have a good feeling moment.
Just go watch it.
Go watch it. Have fun. Really enjoy yourself. Really be in that moment. Really appreciate that. And for whatever reason, you know, whatever your reasoning may be for why that's your moment, let it be your moment. Sink it in and just have a good time.
I think while I do some editing this week, I might go watch WrestleMania 19. It's a good WrestleMania. I might just go watch WrestleMania 19. Or I might go watch WrestleMania X8, Toronto, the vibes. Good old Canadian vibes. I'm going to try to watch a lot of WrestleManias ahead of us going to WrestleMania. So I'm going to start that sometime soon. I'm very excited for it.
I'm going to have to rewatch WrestleMania from last year. And I'm just going to like be on my feet watching the main event of night two. Because it's a great, it's like genuinely such a good match. And then the last minute happens.
Yeah, it's bad. It's pretty much how the 49ers felt about the Super Bowl. It was great till the end. All right, we're out. Thank you for listening as we talked about the career of the Bushwhackers. We're back next week to talk about ODB. We'll talk to you then.
Oh!